Welcome back to the Drive, 3 o'clock hour. Jay Binkley, Rob Brenton. We're at halftime now at the World Cup. Not a hydration break. I'll be honest with you, though, Rob. I don't know why people complain about hydration breaks. I heard CDOT talking about it and stuff like that. I absolutely love it, man. You're sitting there watching soccer for 25, 26 minutes, and nobody scores. You get up to grab a beer, and you sit back down, and somebody scores. Like, what the hell, man? I've been sitting here watching this whole thing, and somebody scores. But somebody that enjoys a good hydration break is Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. What's up, Vern?
It's been a lot of hydration breaks after the post-game show lately.
Has there been?
Well, I mean, really since early April, yeah. It's normally at least a two-beer post-game.
Well, that's one thing I like about you, Vern, because you wear it on your sleeve. Like, they win? No, you do. They win, they lose. I mean, it bothers you, and that's good because it takes...
It's not good for my addictive personality.
Well, I'll compliment you for once, because usually I go the opposite. And but you do. You live it, you breathe it, you sleep it. Like, if the Royals are playing well, like... You love that, or if they start to play bad, it starts to wear on you.
That's
where
a
you
nice way to
fixed.
Tell everybody that I have been a miserable SOB to be around, to talk to text with. Yes, no question about it.
But you got married during this time as well, so that's good.
What are you talking about? I got married.
Yeah, I mean that's.
It was like 7 years. Well, I mean, yeah, they sucked when I got married, and they suck again, if that's what you're saying.
But at least you're married. You're fed well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, you're right. Right. I should be thankful. You're right.
Yeah, but Vinny Pasquantino back with the Royals at his rehab assignment, the last rehab assignment yesterday. Not in the lineup tonight in Baltimore. I expect to see him probably tomorrow. It's Avila and Brandon Young pitching tonight. Expect to see Vinny back, but... just your thoughts on throwing Vinny back in this lineup. Can he stay hot like he did last summer and continue that? Because we've got some other guys in this lineup that looking pretty good at this point.
Yeah, Vinny, the latest example of life comes at you fast. 5 months ago, he's signing, getting some financial security from the organization. He's off to the World Baseball Classic. 4 months ago, he's hitting 3 home runs for Team Italy and kissing everybody and talking trash on television. And yesterday on the On Deck show, I asked a question of, this offseason, who would you rather trade away to bring in the type of starting pitching that this organization needs by opening day of 2027? Would you rather trade Vinny or top prospect Blake Mitchell? And Bink, it was 85-90% of people were saying Vinny.
Really?
I mean, the Pasquatch was everyone's favorite, and all of a sudden, bam, with a awful April again and a slightly better May. Now he was turning it on in June. You started to see the classic, undeniable Vinny Pasquantino, the final 3 weeks, and then he breaks a meaningless bone in his hand, and credit to him, he was supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Today is 3 weeks and 5 days after the surgery, and he's making himself available. You mentioned not in the lineup. I'm fine with that. I'm just glad he's back in uniform, back in the dugout, back in the fight. I know he's been in the dugout, but if you're not out there with the boys, you're not one of the boys. So to have him in uniform, cracking his jokes, hopefully keeping things light. Happy to have him back.
Well, he's a team leader, and you can't be a leader when you're not playing. And I'll say this.
Right.
You look at teams, and I never look at excuses and say, injuries are excuses. I think a lot of teams sometimes do that, and sometimes it's legitimate. Like if you went in the NFL and your quarterback gets hurt, that's a legitimate excuse probably as to why your team's not very good. But with the Royals, it's not an excuse anymore because it continually happens. I mean, the team on paper is not the team on paper that you get during the season. The team that leaves Surprise Arizona is not the team you get because all the surprises that keep coming up, Cole Reagans, Chris Bubich going down, now Mikel Garcia, Vinny Pasquantino hurt again. At some point, you got to get rid of the excuses and just about availability.
Yeah, and had any of those four guys that you mentioned been performing well, I think it would be easier to stomach the excuse or explanation that injuries are why this team now sits 18 games below .500. But You know, Mike Kell was the best of the bunch, and even he was falling short of expectations. He didn't look like the guy that we saw 4 months ago in the World Baseball Classic. Vinny, obviously, with the worst numbers of his career. Cole Reagans gave you three good starts. Chris Bubich maybe gave you another additional one or two. No, if you would have told me that at the beginning of the season, that you're going to get nothing from Reagans, nothing from Estevez, from Bubich, you know, Mike Cal's going to fall short, Vinny's going to fall very short of expectations. No, I wouldn't be surprised that they're 18 games below 500. And now as we look ahead to 2027, how much of it are you comfortable running back? Offensively, I'm talking about the pitching needs to be completely rebuilt. The rotation, the bullpen, it all needs to be rebuilt. But offensively, you know, it's always funny, Bink, and you know, you've done it. We've all done it. We all have our favorite Royal of our lifetime, those few Royals that we thought were going to click and it just never happened. But, you know, over the past few weeks, certain factions of the fan base are finding themselves enamored with Tyler Tolbert or Nick Lofton or Michael Massey or yeah. Isaac Collins. And, you know, you start going down those roads and you're saying, okay, so you like those guys. You like Bobby and Carter and Cags, and you're happy with Mike Cal. You know Salvi's not going anywhere. Are we bringing back the same offense next season? To me, you can't.
No.
So that's why, to me, there needs to be, and to go back to the Vinny or Blake Mitchell question, to me, there needs to be an uncomfortable, painful trade that happens. And to me, that can only happen in the offseason, a truncated offseason, certainly because of the lockout. But, yeah. To rebuild this rotation, to present a 1-5 on opening day of 2027 that looks anywhere near a playoff rotation, it's going to take a drastic move this offseason from this Royals front office, and I think that's the route they have to go.
Yeah, that's why you just don't get excited about guys like Tolbert and stuff like that. Sure, it's great, but you know what?
You're happy for them.
Yeah, happy for them, but you know, major league players make adjustments. And it's those,
and they're all talented. They all can have their moment in the sun if you give them enough opportunities. They're talented ball players, all of them.
Well, it's the ones that make the adjustments. Like Whit Merrifield came up, was a hot player, you know, at the time. Teams made adjustments to him, but you know what? He struck right back. Like he came right back at you. So some guys can do it, and certainly we've seen plenty of guy's come up from the minors or whatever, and all of a sudden this guy's starting for the teams.
Yeah. Remember the run he had with the Mets earlier this season, and people are calling the post-game show saying, look, he gets away from the Royals, and now he's... Yeah. No, he did that with the Royals. He's a
spurts
good baseball player that, like you mentioned, can put on a show, but can he make an adjustment? It's a great point.
Yeah, these players come right back at you. Kegs, obviously in the home run derby, that's going to be fun to watch. He does have 5 hits in his last 4 games. No homers. Hadn't homered since June 23rd. So it's been a little bit rougher with him as far as hitting home runs, because I thought he might be at 17, 18, 19 home runs by the time the All-Star game hits. That's what I was certainly hoping for. But what do you see from Cags lately in what he's doing? Is he going to, because he was started slow, got really hot, and now he's kind of coming back to the pack again. Is it legitimate what we saw going forward, do you feel?
Well, the power certainly is. Can it be consistent power? I think so. You know, since the start of June, batting .287 in OPS in the 900s. You know, let's understand that stretch, that week that he had, was one of the greatest 6-7 game stretches of power that this franchise has ever seen. Right?
Yeah.
That was unsustainable. But you look at the numbers that he's putting up this season. If this is him, as you pointed out, struggling to open up the season, having a nice stretch, but you know that stretch was really limited to about a 2-week stretch. If that equates to a 776 OPS, which is where Cags is at right now, that's better than league average, for a 23-year-old that some were wondering on opening day, is he going to live up to that 6th overall pick billing? Is he going to live up to that Pete Alonso comp? If he has a 776 OPS at the age of 23 and outside of a 2-week stretch, nobody's really been all that impressed with him outside of his rocket left arm. Yeah, I think it's real. Yeah, I think he's only going to get better because I think he has the ability to adjust, like you were just talking about. And I think we've seen that just in the last calendar year, the adjustments that he's made. So, yeah. No, I'm excited for Cags' future, and that's why you have to rebuild this pitching staff by opening day of 2027. Bink, you know as well as anybody, guys like Jack Caglione don't think about Kansas City if they hit free agency. And guys like Jack Caglione don't often hit free agency. So the only way you're going to get someone like him, like Bobby, like Carter Jensen, is by drafting them and developing them. Well, you've done it. You have three of them. And you have them for at least, together, at least the next four seasons. Are you really going to give the organization the pass? And I think that's what you would be doing by saying, oh, they can't do it. They can't put a winner on the field by opening day 2027. Well, then why do you own the team? Right. You know, why are we so convicted and, oh, we got to make sure the team stays here in Kansas City? If winning isn't the ultimate priority, well, then why do you own the team? I think John Sherman is a competitor. I do think that foot's going to find the gas pedal once again this offseason, because to punt on a year in which it's Bobby, Cags, Carter, Michael, you'll regret it. We all know you'll regret waving goodbye to the possibility of the postseason with that quartet.
Yeah, they need to drum up excitement. I sit there in years games at Kauffman Stadium. People are excited. They want to see the Royals. I mean, the fan base is here. Like, there are. Kansas City loves sports. They're here. And my biggest problem is this. Like, guys like Bobby Witt are elite players. Yeah, you can have good players in Major League Baseball, but to get somebody that kind of transcends the sport, that's an elite player, those are few and far between. Those are hard guys to get, and they have one. They have one, Bobby Witt Jr. The other teams would roll over backwards to get a Bobby Witt Jr. You build the pieces around him. I look at Mahomes, and you know, you put pieces around him. That's why I've been screaming for wide receiver help for him, because you have a talented player that you have a window of opportunity to win with that player, and you build the other pieces around him, because you don't want to be sitting in a rocking chair, you know, drinking a Falstaff in 20 years going, why didn't we put talent around
like
that player?
Fans.
Yeah, you don't want to have that player and look back and have that cognitive dissonance and say, why didn't we make this better? Because I look at three guys right now and say, core. And that's Cags, that's Bobby Witt Jr., and that's Carter Jensen. Yeah, I'll probably throw Michael in there because of what they have with him going forward, and I do think there's good things yet to come with him. Vinny, I don't know. I mean, we'll see with availability. I clearly like
Vinny. About tonight's starting pitcher, Lewinder Avila? You know,
he's on the fringe.
Right. No question he's on the fringe, but he has the stuff that isn't anywhere else in this organization outside of on the IL with Cole Reagans, or an A-ball with Kendry Churio and David Shields. Avila has the ability to lead a rotation, to be the big dog at the back end of the bullpen. He has the ability, but like you talked about, can he make the adjustments? Can he do it consistently? To me, next to Cags and Carter staying in the right mindset over the course of these final 3 months, getting that answer from Lewinder Avila, will he fill one of these four major holes on this pitching staff, the top two in the rotation or the top two in the bullpen? He has the ability. I'm hoping over the course of the next 13, 14 starts, we have an answer of, yes, we give the ball to Lewinder Avila opening day 2027 as a starting pitcher, relief pitcher, or do we have to wait to game two, game three? Can he emerge as the guy in this pitching staff? Because right now they need two guys as good or better than Michael Wacha. Lewinder Avila is the only one that has an outside shot. And if it's not him, that just means more money in free agency or a bigger piece that you have to part with in an off-season trade.
I'm a big fan of just looking at cores, you know, like Hosmer and Perez and Moose and Kane. You have your core, and then you build the pieces around them, and that's the direction that you go. All right, the draft's coming up this weekend. We're starting to slide to about 81% of players are college players because name, image, and likeness has changed other sports. It's changing baseball, too. Because guys now, instead of, hey, am I going to go mess around in high A and double A and stuff like that, I'm going to take $1.5 million and go play for Vanderbilt. You know, guys are making that decision, and they're choosing college baseball. And the fans are going nuts. TV ratings are good for it. And so it has changed the game, and we expect players to get here quicker. Should the Royals make a real emphasis on college pitching in this year's draft?
If the talent is there, sure. And there might be one in Jackson, Florida, there at number six. You know, you talk about you need someone to lead the rotation in the next few seasons. I think he's the best chance of that for the Royals there at number six. I know there's a lefty. It's not Gehringer, but it's something similar to Gehringer. He's a two-way player, but a lefty arm. To me, that sixth pick tomorrow, I'm hoping for the aforementioned Jackson Flora, the best starting pitcher, college pitcher, or Jacob Lombard. His brother's in the Yankee system. His dad played in the show. He looks like a natural. And when it comes to baseball, really when it comes to any sport, I'm always going to side on the side of bloodlines. If your old man was in the game and your brother's in the game, boy, you're going to be able to have conversations after games with people that you know have your best interest in mind. You're going to get advice, or as Bobby Witt Jr. always calls his dad, my cheat sheet. So that Lombard kid, to me, one of those two would be ideal for me at six. So no, to answer your question, because Lombard's a high school kid, so I'm not tied to anything other than best player available.
Yeah, well, Flora, here's the thing, though. He's coming out of UC Santa Barbara. What's his arm length like, Vern? I'm kidding you.
I don't know, but I guarantee they know. I mean, extension, right?
The extension, the arm length?
You know, that extension's
big.
Yeah,
stuff's important,
some of these
man.
Guys, Chris Young, it's like you're handing the ball to the catcher.
Good stuff, Vern. You have the All-Star break coming up here. Enjoy Cags in the Home Run Derby. Well, we have just one player left. One player to fill because Schwarber's going to be in and out. So there's one slot, or they filled
that
already?
Yes, one spot left. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Schwarber, Harper, those two went at it in the final back in 2018 in Washington. I'm hoping they do it. I'm rooting for Cags, but Schwarber and Harper in Philly, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Michael Irvin being one of the broadcasters on Home Run Derby. That'll be fun.
Oh, I love Michael Irvin. He is.
It'll be fun. He's one of the Netflix crew. He's going to be with Warren Chiodi. I think they're going to be offside or onside. I don't know where they're going to be, but he's part of it, yes.
Well, I haven't watched NFL Network's Sunday morning pregame since
he left. It's on Netflix now. The Home Run Derby's on Netflix.
Oh, I'm aware. I can't wait. I'm happy that Michael Irvin's back.
Yeah, I knew you were aware. You're always aware, Vern. Yeah, Baltimore, you get a pregame show coming up here.
That's right, 5 o'clock. Your chance to win tickets to see the Padres or the Giants come to town. I got a Bobby Witt Jr. bobblehead or a Michael Garcia bobblehead coming up at 5 o'clock.
What, the Vern bobblehead, buddy?
No, nobody's interested in that.
That's Sasquatch.
No one has brought that up. No one's interested in that big ball.
I think they are. I think people at the station would like it.
Well, make it happen, Bink. You're the big money guy around there.
Right. Good stuff, Vern, as always. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, getting ready for the Royals and Orioles for three games before the All-Star break. We can see Jack Caglione. Again, sometimes you draw on what the little things are, and that's, you know, getting a guy in Home Run Derby because the team's in the tank and, you know, coming off an 82-win season last year, making the playoffs the year before. Taking that step backwards is tough to do. Rob and I just spent time talking about these NFL teams ready to take that step forward and just can't. We still have a tie in Belgium and Spain at this point. But coming up next, kind of build off what Vern was saying. What are the real building blocks for the Kansas City Royals? Who do you not want to see being moved, or you don't care if anybody's moved? We'll talk about that next.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on Kansas City's only FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to The Drive. Jay Binkley, Rob Brenton, still 1-1. Rob, was I watching that right? Did that Belgium goalkeeper take one to the parts?
He got in the legs.
Oh, it sure looked like it, man. But he didn't flop around, though, so I assume he didn't take it there. But that's that was very close. Very close to being hit where you don't want to be hit with the soccer ball. We'll get to this in a little bit. But the building blocks for the Kansas City Royals, I mentioned it to Vern there. I think right now it's Kegs, Jensen, and Bobby Witt. Bobby Witt's completely untradeable to me. And then I want to see the building blocks with Carter Jensen and Caglione. And you're willing to listen to everybody else. You're willing to listen to Waka. You're willing to listen to Lugo, which, according to Ken Rosenthal, doesn't look like the Royals are going to move Lugo and Waka. Of course, they are going to need somebody to pitch next season. We know that is for sure. But building block, do you have a building block players where you're like untradeable to me, or is it just Bobby Witt Jr.? Bobby Witt Jr., everybody else can be moved.
I got it as Bobby. I got it as Kegs. I got it as Jensen. That's probably the list. That's probably the grouping.
Would you say Bobby Cags Jensen?
Bobby Cags Jensen. I think Perez is movable. I think Garcia's movable. I think Pasquantino's movable. I think all those pitchers are movable. We can talk about here in a minute about if you think that would be a good call. But I think the overhaul the Royals need, they need to be very transactional, and now is the time to be transactional with a lockout looming.
I mean, you might as well be. I mean, falling in love with certain players on your team gets you so far. But again, like the elite ones, Bobby Witt Jr. is elite. Yes, I think Carter, Jensen, and Cags can be very good. But elite player is Bobby Witt Jr. That's one you absolutely tick off the table. You don't trade him with any reason, because finding another piece like Bobby Witt Jr. in the draft is nearly impossible. The Royals stumbled upon that because they really haven't had that transcendent player a ton of times in their career. Yeah, there's been good ones. Carlos Beltran's been good, and then he left. George Brett, clearly an iconic piece with the Royals that they got, you know, came up through the system and developed. But it's few and far between those elite players, and they make the difference between you winning and losing, as the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. But it's going to take a trade that hurts, and that's fine as long as the team can play better. Don't be emotionally attached to certain players. And I know some teams get emotionally attached to players. I think the Chiefs were emotionally attached when Priest Holmes got his last contract because they had drafted Larry Johnson in the first round. But they were attached to Priest Holmes. He got that extra contract coming off that injury. Again, you don't become attached to players. You come attached to winning and availability. Availability is the only ability that you can have. It's so important. And I'm done. If guys are always hurt, maybe there's a reason, man. And it's tough. It's just like when Cole Reagans went down. It's like, and someone on the text line was asking, why are people surprised when guys like Cole Reagans are hurt? No, we're not surprised at all. I'm not surprised at all. Once he got hurt the first time, I'm like, oh, we probably won't see him this year. Or Estevez, you're not going to see him the rest of the year. There's certain guys you know that you can't count on, and you got to get in that area where you count on. I thought Vinny was turning that corner where you can count on him each and every day, and I hope that goes well for him. I think he comes on a lot of bad luck when it comes to injuries with Vinny, but I do enjoy Vinny because the guy is a team leader. The guys like him, and when he rakes, he really rakes. But those three guys right there are my core pieces that I would build around. But the bottom line is you have to be willing to do something that hurts a little bit. Vern talked about it the other night on his postgame show.
I laid it out earlier today on the On Deck show. I believe a difficult, painful trade needs to be made. Not at the deadline, though. I think that painful, uncomfortable, anxiety-ridden trade, a la the Will Myers-Jake Odorizzi trade from 13 years ago, one of those trades that when it happens, boy, you're hopeful, but you're also incredibly nervous that it's going to backfire. I think one of those trades needs to go down this offseason.
And it should, because what are you really building on, Rob? You've got, yeah, Bobby. I mean, that's your core piece right there. You never move. Mikel, I guess if you want to put that in as a fluke injury, and you're still counting on him going for the future. But you got to look at your building block, man. Then you put your pieces around him. Lugo and Waka is an interesting thing. Where'd that rain come from, man? All of a sudden, it's just like,
it's out of nowhere. It's pouring here, yeah.
It was just like out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I hear this noise, and I look outside, and it was like, it was almost like someone's throwing a Coke against the window. It's like, man, it's just pouring down rain. I don't know where you're at, but it's sporadic thunderstorms around. But, man, this place just got inundated with rain. Just exactly what we needed is more rain in Kansas City. But, man, oh, man, this thing is just, I know there's sun around Kansas City. I'm sure the text line will let us know where sun is. But, man, just the monsoon happened just right at the blink of an eye here at our studios. But, no, it's going to be painful. But you make these moves, man. You don't become attached to players, managers, anybody else, because it's cyclical. Guys come in, they struggle, they leave. They get hurt, they want to get out. Finding that elite player like a Bobby Witt Jr. you do not move from, and you build upon, because if you want to get better, you got to make things that are uncomfortable. Well, they always say if GMs listen to the fans, they're going to be a fan sitting with the fans if they don't listen to that. But the other thing with Lugo and Waka, what's going to happen with them? Ken Rosenthal addressed Michael Waka and Lugo.
The Royals, with Bobby Witt Jr. and Mikel Garcia signed long-term, with Vinny Pasquantino still there, with Jack Caglione coming and Carter Jensen coming on as well, they believe they can be good next year. They should have been good this year, and they're not going to tear down with Witt and Garcia signed long-term. The other problem that they have is their starting pitching is in a problematic place for 2027. Cole Reagans will not be available after undergoing a UCL repair until probably July at the earliest. Chris Bubich is a free agent. So you look at that, and then you have the challenge of not really having much at AAA ready to step in. The question becomes, okay, who's going to pitch for them next year? And that is why they would demand a massive haul to even entertain considering or entertain or consider trading one of those guys. Now, Lugo is not having a great year. Waka, of course, is an all-star. But I really don't see the Royals getting pushed enough to trade either of those pitchers.
I don't think they do either. Because I think they look at it and they look at next year. And the shame is you've had a top five pitching staff despite all the injuries for the last 2 years. Like, that's where the Royals have been the last 2 years. And that's just wasted time, man. It's just wasted space going through. Haven't you felt that way with the Royals pitching? I know that I turned around our weekly bets we do with Vern, right? Where you pick something, I was going all pitching. Every single Sunday when I do my thing, it was pitching. It was strikeouts over there. The most reliable thing on this team has been pitching. That's what got me back into it at that point. But Lugo and Walker, would I trade them? 100% I would be if the return's good enough. I mean, no emotional attachment to either. Are you willing to trade Lugo and Walker? I don't think they do.
I don't think they do, but I would be willing to trade Lugo and Walker.
100%.
Now, me and Vern see this differently, and that's fine. You know, intelligent minds can disagree. I feel like I'm not as worried as who's going to pitch next year, who's going to pitch right into this year, because I feel like acquiring more high-end pieces is more important. I don't know that you're going to get a Tarek Skubal type of haul for Michael Waka, but you can probably add a high-end prospect, a major league-ready player, and then a lottery ticket type of player for Michael Waka right now. You could add a guy who's tearing it up in Double-A, a low-A arm, and a guy who's trapped in Triple-A in someone else's organization. That, to me, is three blue-chip pieces that I'm willing to make the move for. Lugo has not been good this year, so maybe you can't get the massive haul for him, but if you can get his salary off the books and get something back, I'm willing to do that. I do think they're going to have Burgert next year, who at times looked good this season. They're going to have They're going to have Luis Avila, who looked good at times this year. And this organization has shown me in the past when bad years happen and they identify pitching as a problem, they went out in free agency and fixed it. Remember, when they added Lugo and Waka, it wasn't like those guys were coming up the pipeline. They went out and signed those guys. So I'm a proponent of moving one, if not both those, to add more blue chip players to the, you know, to the foundation, to the roster, to the core, so that then you don't have to go out and sign mega money deals all over the place. But I don't think the Royals are going to do that, but I would be a proponent of moving both.
Yeah, I'm a proponent to move anything and everything. Obviously, I want to keep Kegs, Bobby Witt Jr., and Jack Caglione, but that's the core I work with. That's the core I work around. You fill pieces in around him. All right, I kind of got this game on, Rob. Why did Belgium pull their goalie?
There was an injury. He suffered an injury. He apparently got caught up in the turf when he slid to make that diving save, when he slid to make that sliding save, and okay, he had to come off. So that they're now rocking with a backup goalkeeper for the rest of the way.
That's an interesting situation. I wonder how hurt he really is, because
he came off the field in tears. He's an older player. It might be his last World Cup match.
So it could be a difference maker for Belgium.
I think it would be a big difference, especially as this thing inches closer and closer to PKs.
Oof. Man, can't believe that. But I just saw the goalie off. I was like, what the hell did they pull the goalie? Speaking of the World Cup, did you ever hear that Channel 9 news in Denver, what they had to say about Kansas City?
I have not heard that.
I figured you would find this interesting, Rob. That's why I'm glad that you're here for it, because I want to get your instant reaction to this, because this is what they're saying in Denver. And I always felt like Denver was going to peacock around a little bit. You saw it with the way the Denver Broncos fans were acting. You know, once their team got good, they won the division. You know, they forget about those 16 straight losses. They forget about Kansas City owning the division. They forget about all the Super Bowl trophies the Chiefs were accumulating while they wallowed around with Russell Wilson crap. They forget about all that. And why don't we get good events in Denver? At least they can admit why they didn't get the World Cup in Kansas City, and Kansas City did. But they do take a few shots at Kansas City, and it's hysterical. Listen to this, Rob.
The biggest loser in the 2026 FIFA World Cup is Denver, Colorado.
The FIFA World Cup has been incredible. But the biggest question asked here in Colorado is why are the games not being played in Denver? And seeing Kansas City host games is painful. Compared to Mile High, Arrowhead Stadium is a dump. You know what? Arrowhead Stadium is a dump compared to Cherry Creek Stadium. The Mile High City is the blueprint for events like this. Great facilities for the teams to train, hotels galore, and a massive stadium that fills up for soccer matches. Remember the Denver Summit home opener and when Messi came to town? The simple answer? Denver didn't want to pay for it. The spokesperson from Visit Denver shared to me that the FIFA World Cup's official contract requires host cities to take on all of the costs and commit to an open-ended budget. If they refused to agree to those terms, they would not be considered. And the Denver Sports Commission chose not to sign that agreement. Several states with host sites approved tax breaks and funding boosts to help out for the Cup, but Governor Jared Polis nor former Denver Mayor Michael B. Hancock approved funds or passed any legislation to help out. Denver is a spectacular sports town, but they've rejected major events like this before. Like in 1976, when Denver became the only city in history to officially deny the Olympic Games after being awarded the bid. And so, the Mile High City watches from the sidelines.
So at least they took shots at Denver as well, but they had to throw Kansas City in there in the dump. What, Cherry Creek Stadium, what are they talking about?
I think that's where the Rapids play. That's my guess. I don't know that for sure.
What's the capacity, though, there? I know that the Denver FC, Summit FC, it's one of their teams they have there. They play in a 12,000-seat stadium. What's the Denver, the Colorado Rapids stadium hold?
Cherry Creek Stadium? Is that what the name of it was?
That's what he said. They could play in Cherry Creek Stadium is what he said.
Cherry Creek Stadium is where the NWSL team plays. It's a 12,000-seat stadium that will become the permanent home in 2028 of their NWSL team.
Where do the Rapids actually play?
That's a great question.
They said they play at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, Commerce City, Colorado. Capacity, 18,062. First of all, the World Cup would stick their nose up at that and say, no, we're going to play at an NFL venue. It's going to have to be played at Mile High. They said it right there. They didn't want to do the proposals. It was going to cost too much money, and they didn't want to deal with it. Kansas City's willing to deal with it, and Kansas City got it right there in the mix with the Atlantas, the LAs, the Dallas, the Houstons. You know, they stepped up and said, hey, we want the event. We're willing to pay for the event. We want it here. It's going to be good for our city, and they did it. Denver didn't. But you knew Denver would hold this in when it went to Kansas City and not Denver, and they are holding that down. And Kansas City's been a great spot for it. Now, you can think this is a total football city, which, you know, I love football in the NFL, and so do people around this town. Everywhere you go, there's someone with the Chiefs license plate or Chiefs hat or shirt on. They love the Chiefs. But you do have a soccer-specific stadium for the women's soccer team, CBKC Stadium. Sporting Kansas City always has good crowds. The number one market in soccer for Team USA on Fox was Kansas City each and every week, even though they didn't play here. It didn't matter. It didn't even matter if the World Cup was in Kansas City or not. They still would have led in ratings because they love watching. It's why Fox only shows Power and Light. Anytime Team USA is playing, they always have, you know, live shots of Power and Light once a team scores and everybody goes nuts. And yes, Arrowhead went wild for Messi when he played. It's not like just Denver goes wild for Messi. I think every place goes wild for Messi when he plays. And you know what? Saturday night will come, Robin. People will go nuts for Messi playing in a soccer game. I thought that was incredibly unfair. At least they were fair about Denver not stepping up and getting the World Cup, but taking shots at Kansas City. You knew Denver had this little Kansas City envy about him.
Listen, this is a credit to everyone involved in the World Cup in Kansas City. There is not a doubt in my mind, Kansas City punched above its weight class. Like, I don't want to sit here and be pro-Denver. Denver's worse than Kansas City. But Denver, if they had put in a bid, I think would have gotten it over Kansas City. But they didn't, so they don't. But credit where it's due. No city hosting World Cup matches is as small as Kansas City, and they have been an absolute beacon of greatness. Anyone you talk to that has been in and around the World Cup talks about how good a job Kansas City has done. We had Allie Trost on the show a few weeks ago. She obviously works in New York now. She says people that she works with are in awe of how well Kansas City has done. So to get the World Cup, Kansas City had to punch above its weight class, and now they have it. They've done a great job with it. So if you want to be salty, Denver, you can be salty, but I don't think they would have done a quality job the way Kansas City has done a quality job.
And playing in NFL stadiums has certainly helped. You see the stadiums in Canada? They were like 22 to 25, you know, capacity some of these places, weren't they? like Toronto, in Vancouver and
Toronto
stuff?
Toronto was, Vancouver's a bigger stadium. That's an Olympic stadium, I believe.
Okay. I know the capacity was down, but can't say what there'll be, what, 69,000 something at Arrowhead Saturday night?
I'm betting it'll be what right at the 69,000 top end they get.
Because they took a little bit of capacity away when it wasn't. But you've been to a game out there at Arrowhead Stadium. You've been to a World Cup game. It's loud, isn't it? I mean, incredibly loud.
It's unique in the fact that it's different than any other sporting event I've been to, and the fact that it's just constant noise. There's not like that one moment where it's like, stand up, it's third down, but it's a constant, oh, it's like you're just kind of watching the flow of the game. It's a very enjoyable time. Also, when I was there, the entire upper tank was kind of a neutral, so they were kind of just enjoying the spectacle of it.
Who did you see when you...
I saw Austria and Algeria.
Okay, well, imagine if Messi was there.
My price tag would have been higher if Messi was there.
Did you see those prices go up and down that Argentina game when they were down? They had to come back there at the end. They would go up and down, right? I know the dream was to have Ronaldo play Messi at Arrowhead Stadium. That would have been cool. Did you care who played in Kansas City on Saturday night?
It's better for the local economy than Messi's 100%. Here, I'll tell you that.
100%.
Switzerland, Egypt would have been great because World Cup, but if you're a local vendor, you're very happy that Messi's coming to town in 24 hours.
And Switzerland, I mean,
they're nice. I think it would have been better if it was Colombia, but you know, beggars can't be choosers.
Because they bring a ton of people too. So, what do you think the largest fan base that's been following its team has been besides USA?
England, probably. England's got.
You think England?
They had a big crowd down in Mexico City, which is pretty impressive.
Is Kansas City even flooded with England fans? I mean, I haven't noticed.
They haven't played a match here, so I haven't noticed them.
Yeah, people don't just go to the base camp areas and just hang out.
If they do, they're not like wearing their gear around town the way like an Argentinian fan is.
Didn't some teams change their base camp or leave their base camp?
You can change your base camp after the knockout round stages. So
so if you're on the East Coast or West Coast, you get closer?
Correct.
But obviously the ones in Kansas City didn't want to because of the central location.
And Argentina's already playing a match here, so they stuck around. And, you know, the Netherlands lost, so they don't get a choice. Yeah. They have to go home.
Kansas City had four base camps in Kansas City, and the only other city that had two, I think. So Kansas City doubled the highest amount of base camps of any town that had base camps.
Like I said, punching above their weight class.
They really are. And I think they pulled it off, man. You kind of see what I'm saying about the All-Star game in 2012. That was kind of like the first big event, you know, in Kansas City. In the modern day. The modern day, not talking about the 85 World Series or anything like that. But I'm saying having the All-Star game in 12 and then kind of building off that, you know, and then getting the NFL or the airport, the NFL draft, and now the World Cup. How much do you think this is going to make Kathy Nelson's job and the sports commission's job easier when you list your resume now? Because you bring in that sheet and say, all right, we've hosted this, 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 and this. And beforehand, they could walk in with, hey, we've hosted the Big 12 basketball tournament. You could walk in with that. But when you can walk in with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the World Series, a team that's won three Super Bowls, had all these parades in this town, hosted an NFL draft, which is huge on a lot of people's list if you can host big events or not with the NFL draft. But then you add World Cup to it. I mean, is there anything better besides getting the Super Bowl that you could put on a resume sheet?
I think they're going to use that resume sheet to get a Super Bowl. That's going to be part of their plan here is my guess.
Yeah, they could pull off the World Cup. That they could do it. I just think that this is the ultimate pelt on the wall. I mean, you have the World Cup, you walk in, you drop the mic. It's like being a Hall of Fame, one of the writers that goes to the Hall of Fame and states the case of a player. You know, there's certain players you don't do it for, Rob. Like Joe Montana, you don't need to give his stats. You walk in, you say, Joe Montana, and then you sit down. You walk in, you say, Jerry Rice, and then you just go sit down, right? You just walk in, Kathy Nelson walks in, says, World Cup, sits down. That's where she's got to, isn't it? With the sports commission?
I mean, she could say more. I mean, she might get the Women's World Cup here, too. So there's a lot she can say because she's done an excellent job getting big events to Kansas City.
Was there any surprises you had when you talked? Because you talked to everybody, from the mayor to the organizers to TV reporters to security of the stadium to everything. Is there any surprises that they were thrown that kind of surprised you?
They had the hiccups with transportation early created a problem, but they, to their credit, found the problem, identified it, and then have since fixed it since that date.
Interesting. All right, Rob, we'll take a timeout. We come back. Guess what? Somebody didn't make the cut in a professional sport, and it's kind of shocking. Discuss it next.
You're listening to The Drive.
My man, Carrington Harrington.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5, The Fan.
Welcome back to The Drive. Jay Binkley, Rob Britton. That didn't take long for Spain to get back on the board. 2-1 Spain now over Belgium without their number one keeper, as they had to make a substitution for that. All right, the real surprise, Rob, to me was Scottie Scheffler, world number one in golf, which he's what won once this year, but he's finished a bunch, like 2 and 3. And I mean, he's always in the top five, just always, he's always around. You maybe think he's having a bad tournament, then all of a sudden you look at the leaderboard on Sunday and he's right there, right around five. Do you know that back, I looked back at his, back in the day, like Texas junior leagues, when he was becoming a pro and all this, he won like 70% of the tournaments he was in. Can you believe that? I mean, this guy just wins everything he goes, but he missed the cut for the Scottish Open. It's over there. He's preparing for the British Open coming up here. The last time he missed the cut was 1,428 days ago at the 2022 FedEx St. Jude Championship. 78 straight time. Matt Fitzpatrick is number two, 28 straight golf tournaments, not missing a cut. Matsuyama, 27. And Cam Young down tied at 19. But
by the way, to give you some quick stats on how long ago this was.
Unreal.
Do you know Taylor Swift was dating someone named Joe Allen? She's now married to Travis Kelce. Tom Brady was on the Bucks when he last missed a cut. The World Cup hadn't started, the Qatar World Cup. And Elon Musk did not own Twitter or X at that time. Just to give you an idea of how long in pop culture it's been since Scottie Scheffler failed to not just win, but make a cut. Goodness gracious.
I mean, that is unreal. To think about just the stress and pressure on that. I mean, here's the one thing about it. You ever notice that? Like, he may have a bad Friday, something like that, but he's always making the cut. Then Sunday, you look and he's right there. Like, he's right. He finds himself right there in the top five. The 2022 Kansas City Chiefs, do you remember what they did?
They were Super Bowl champions, right? They were cut in July when he missed the cut. They would have been going into camp, I think.
Well, it was 23 that the Super Bowl was played, but it was a 22 season. They beat Philadelphia 38-35. When you put it like that, man, 2022 sounds a long time ago from 2026, doesn't it? It shows you how long Mahomes has been, because Mahomes' first year starting was 2018. And we were talking about, I can't imagine if you went back to 2018 and looked at stuff. I mean, it was before COVID. We didn't know what COVID was. We didn't heard the term. I can't even imagine 2018. I'm curious. Wow. 2022. Taylor had not met Travis.
She was dating another person, and now she's married.
And what was his name?
Joe Allyn. I believe it's Allen, but I don't know how to pronounce that.
I've never heard of Joe Allen.
I also don't know. I don't know her dating hit. If there's a Swiftie listening, you probably know the history of her dating life better than me, but that's the spelling I saw on social media.
Does she have a diss track about Joe?
Probably. She's a diss track about everyone.
Think she'll ever make one about with Travis? Will he be in like every single song?
I don't know if she'll make a diss track about
in a good
him.
Not a diss track, a good way.
She definitely will reference him in a song. She already has referenced him in a song. That song Wood she did on the latest album.
You see that Tom Brady was even there? I mean, that was...
Everyone's there, man.
Well, not everybody, but you got the invite. You found a way to get to New York for it. Man, there was certainly some NFL talent in that building. But Scottie Scheffler misses the cut, which I don't know how much that bothers him because he can rest and chill up for the tournament. But Scottie's the ultimate pro, and he likes to win everything and love watching him golf. So that definitely sucks, to be honest with you. Coming up next, back to Vinny. Back with the Royals. He's not in the starting lineup tonight, but he's back with the Kansas City Royals. You'll probably see him tomorrow. Discuss that next.